mic to you. It's now my pleasure to introduce Dave Jones to you, Red Hat kernel maintainer, for his unique perspective on why user space still sucks. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you. I gave a version of this talk in Ottawa last year, which was, it was kind of the warm-up for this one, really, because there's about 50% old stuff that I covered last year and a lot more new stuff, which is why the still sucks in the title. The previous talk was called Why User Space Sucks. So a lot of this work came out of the development we were doing in the RAMP 2 store core 6. And there are two main motivations inspiring this work. One was reducing the time that it takes to boot your operating system to a useful state. And once it's booted, we didn't want to waste time doing useful stuff that just made no sense. It was stuff we could postpone until we actually needed to do this work. So one of the first things we came up with for reducing boot time was to introduce a process to read ahead a bunch of files off of disk during idle times during boot up. For example, while you're waiting for a DHCP release and the system's otherwise idle, just waiting on network activity. So we thought we'd use this opportunity to prefetch a load of files off of disk, so when we actually do need to load them once we're done waiting for a DHCP release, they're already in the page cache and we can just read them really, really quickly. The difficult part of this is you don't know beforehand which files you need to preload because you haven't loaded them yet. So the first thing we did to determine that was we came up with this really nasty kernel patch. And the kernel patch just basically the print cane all of the sysopen and sysstat and all the other syscalls that do file IO. And it just floods the kernel ring buffer with lots and lots of messages. After we'd created this list of files to read ahead, we started looking at it a little closer and thinking, this is doing something really unusual. We started noticing these really odd things, and we started enhancing the patch a little more to monitor all the I/O, for example, deletes and all sorts of other things. And at this point, the kernel patch started getting really, really ugly, so one of the other guys at Red Hat started working on their system tap script, which was a fraction of the size and a lot more portable across different kernel versions. So sifting through this huge log file, it takes a long time. So one of the first things you realize is disable the read-ahead process, because once if you're trying to profile this while you have this running, you're just going to have all this horrible noise and you have to sift all this out of the logs and that's messy. So that's how many lines of output we had from just booting up and logging into a GNOME session on Fedora 4.6. It's 155,000 lines, which is a long time to sift through. Because the kernel ring buffer is only a small size, the only way we capture all this is over a serial console as well, which has made it a little more open to use. So that's the results of picking through the 155,000 line log file. Turns out we set just under 80,000 files during boot up. We opened 26,000 files, and nearly every time we open files, we read some of those files at least once. And we were executing nearly 1,500 commands. Shutdown wasn't much more pretty. We touched 23,000 files in some manner every time we shut down, and we opened 8,500. So a lot of the things I'm about to going through, because there's some real horror shows in amongst this log, and I don't know any of the people in this audience are actually the developers of the things I'm about to start ripping into. I don't want you to think that this is some kind of personal attack or something. I tried to take this in the lighthearted manner in which it was intended. So, yeah. So one of the first things that stuck out like a sore thumb was how. To the HAL developer's credit, this has now been fixed. But it's so funny, I decided to use it again in this talk. So the major disaster that Hal was doing was he was rereading and reparsing XML files during startup. Sometimes each XML file was reparsed 54 times. For no reason, you'd read it off the disk, translate it from XML into its own in-memory space, do something with it, and then throw it away, and then it would repeat the whole process 54 times. Also, he was reading a bunch of these files describing various hardware that just wasn't plugged in. I mean, Hal has dozens and dozens of these description files for all different types of hardware. And chances are most of the hardware you just don't have. And over time, this is only going to increase as Hal starts getting more and more support on more and more devices. So it's it really needs to do a lot more sort of loading on demand rather than just read everything and hope that we have these devices plugged in. So Hal was responsible for just under 2,000 files being opened and around 7,000 files being started. I'm not actually sure how much that came down after that was fixed, but judging from the output of the logs, it's probably substantial. So still picking on Hal. Hal does this nice thing where you put in a CD and it pops up a nice Nautilus window or whatever, auto-mounts the CD for you. It does this by polling the CD drive every 2 seconds, even if you're not logged in. So right now, for example, this is polling CD drive. Well, I'm logged into GNOME right now, but even if I logged out of GNOME, it would still be polling the CD drive every 2 seconds. It turns out to be a really, really bad idea on certain machines, like 1024-way 64s. Every time we did this, every time this happens on such a huge box, it just totally destroys the performance. We have all kinds of nasty things happening with cross-CPU interrupts happening, and it's a horrible, horrible mess. So, it probably should be changed to at least not do it when people are not logged in, at least not logged into the desktop. CUPS is another favorite of mine. CUPS seems to take forever to start up, especially on my laptop. I'm going to profile this to realize exactly why. I have these PPD files describing every print you can ever think of and a whole bunch more that you've never even heard of by all these weirdo vendors. And it does this even if you don't have a printer connected. So that was responsible for 2,500 files being started and 500 opened. It still does that today, but from some of the talks I saw earlier this week, it could be possible that something like Upstart or something equivalent might be the answer to something like this too. To load it on demand when you actually do need to print something, when you do have a printer connected. So CUPS wasn't the only problem with this. We have something else installed in Fedora, and quite a few other distros probably have this thing as well. It's called HPLib. It's a printing magic for Hewlett-Packard printers. This is a very specific thing that only a subset of users, even those with printers, are going to need. And every half a second, this thing wakes up. It's waiting there in the select loop, and it just wakes up, and the select loop times out every half a second for no reason whatsoever. This socket events will wake it up when it's actually needed. So that's completely pointless in most cases. This is another one that was subsequently fixed. This was fixed very, very quickly, actually. I think people are actually working on fixing one of the branches in EXO, which is coming in 7.3. But it's been fixed for a while, and I think people were actually poking at it while I was giving the talk in Ottawa last year. You know how fast they could fix it, and they could fix it by the end of the talk thing. So X's PCI probing is special. So this is what it was doing. It would scan through proc.pci in order, and it would just guess random numbers and say, is there a PCI bus at this address? It would then try to open those devices, and unsurprisingly, they would fail most of the time. Then it would sort of become sort of pseudo-random, or not quite so random. It would start probing between buses S6 through to SB, even if those buses weren't present and the computer was scanning. And once it did that, it basically started over and did a whole bunch of other weird stuff. I have an example of just how weird that is. Make it bigger. Oops. So this is the topology of the bus that I was doing doing this profiling on. So I should don't know if that one flipped, but this one isn't. You have basically three columns on the left, which is the PCI the PCI bus, the device, and the function. So you can see there's only 24 lines, 23 actual devices in this thing. So I'll leave that one there. So as you can see, it's completely all over. Here's what it did. It looks pretty sane to start off with, start scanning through devices. And it's been scanning through devices that actually exist to begin with. We have bus zero, we have a bus zero, and we have some of these devices that actually exist. So we got it through, and we got devices 2, 3, 4, 5. 7, 8, 9, A, B, C, D, E, goes on and on. Devices actually stopped some time ago. We're now scanning devices that don't exist. A page at a time. This goes on for some time. I think now we just jump to random things. We scan bus 25, bus 4F, 79, 95, BF, E9, F6, F7, F7 again. It's completely all over the place. It's how this was ever intended to work is a complete mystery. It's horrendous. Absolutely horrendous. So, yeah, there you go. So we had 23 devices, and we tried to probe 1,328 of them. And surprisingly, it didn't really work out so well. But it did eventually find the graphics. It would be even worse if it didn't find it, right? So when it's not busy scanning PCI buses that don't exist, X really, really likes to start and reopen lots of files that it's already opened, like the GL library, for example. The X module loader used to be really special, doing all sorts of things like this, and Daniel Stone fixed it up sometime last year. I think that is in mainline right now, isn't it? Yeah, that is fixed. The module loader was doing similar stuff, reopening and doing all kinds of really, really horrible stuff. 40,000 lines of code to fix the problem were deleted. Yeah. It's always a good thing when you delete more code than you add to fix the problem. So moving on to next. So we have this process called IRQ balance. And on an SMP system, they make sure there's some kind of fairness with that, so that one CPU doesn't get completely hammered with interrupts. We sort of balance them out, so they each get to do a little bit of work. So the IRQ balancer wakes up every 10 seconds. I'm pretty sure what happens. This is what your interrupts look like. So you have two CPUs in this box, and some of them are kind of maybe somewhat unevenly balanced, but there's some balancing going on between, for example, the I842 driver and the LibATA driver. They're somewhat balanced. So the problem with it was rebalancing interrupts even when no IRQs had ever happened. Like, for example, the UHCI HCD USB3 interrupt there. There's nothing plugged into that USB port, so no interrupts have ever happened on that device. But still, every 10 seconds, IRQ balance would was round-robbing between the two CPUs there. That's not all it was doing. It was also rebalancing interrupts where we'd had some interrupts in the past, but we hadn't in a long time. Some of them, you'll notice you only get an interrupt sort of rarely, like ETH0. When I was booting up, it was trying to get DHCP lease, so it caused five interrupts to do that. It failed to get DHCP lease, so there's been no subsequent interrupts. But still, every 10 seconds, it was rebalancing those that interrupt. Completely pointless. So that's just a two-line change to fix all of that horrible nonsense. Something else I was doing, given that this is going to be happening every 10 seconds and it's completely deterministic, it's not going to do anything different. It was doing open of the file edge catted, opening it, reading it, closing it every 10 seconds. So you may as well just keep these FDs open if you're constantly going to be reopening them. Save yourself a ton and ton of syscalls. File notification. This is a fun one. So, way back when, the 70s and 80s or something, when it was when apps wanted to be notified when a file had changed, or when the contents had changed, when it had been deleted or whatever, the application would spin in a loop, polling the file to find out if anything had happened. Sometime later, SGI wrote a daemon called FAM for IRIX, which took advantage of some kernel functionality in IRIX to give notification when this sort of thing actually happened. So applications didn't need to sit there in a loop. They could just call FAM, and FAM would actually wake it up, and it would do the nice things. Time passes, and Linux gains something called denotify in the kernel, which similar kind of thing, but had some shortcomings. And someone then subsequently ported FAM to work with Linux denotify. Then, a few years ago, we added iNotify to the kernel after the requests of thousands of desktop developers who really, really wanted this thing because it would be really cool to have. It has a number of advantages over denotify and works a lot better. And then we had something called Gammin. Gammin is to iNotify what FAM is, I guess, to the IRIX functionality in their kernel. So we have this sort of slight progression over time here, except the problem with Gammin is it's completely insane. So remember we were trying to get away from sort of sitting in a loop polling files? Let me see this horror show. This is what Gammin is doing right now. Sitting there in a poll loop. Also, you see the sys292 calls that are scrolling up screen every so often? Big batch of them every so often, returning with enoent. It does that when you have an existing iNotify event. It's an iNotify syscall. It's trying to add a new watch. Except it has a different behavior. The add watch that they're trying to do there is updating an existing watch. But they're trying to update a watch that doesn't exist for some reason. This is cascading through all the desktop as well. Go on to show. Serious disaster. So, yeah, when the iNotify calls are failing, Gammin falls back to doing polling, which is just like iNotify never even happened. So, as you can imagine, something's sitting there in a loop doing this over and over, causing an incredibly high number of context switches per second, which is a really, really bad thing for power management. So Nautilus is kind of suffering some of the fallout from this problem. So it's Nautilus spends a lot of time stabbing these three files here, the home templates, user share applications, home.local share applications. And it does this so that the little menus you have here, say for example you install a new package and it wants to add an icon to these menus, that's how it knows when to add an icon to this menu. It's sitting there waiting for those directives to change to see if any icons turn up. So for a long time, Nautilus is actually sitting there polling this by hand until someone actually said, hey, you should really use iNotify. Unfortunately, that was misinterpreted as, you should really use Gammin. So what happens now is you can trace Nautilus. It does exactly the same. That's exactly the same thing that that Gammin does, which is not so good. Yeah. So that needs fixing. Fonts, this is a fun one. So looking through the 155,000 line log, certain things just stood out, which didn't look quite right. Applications, I had maybe a dozen or so fonts installed. And I was thinking, this application only seems to use two fonts, so why is there opening a half dozen to a dozen fonts? That's weird things. So I decided to try and make the problem worse to see if the problem amplified itself. So I did this by installing 6,000 PDFs to home.fonts, which is incredibly insane. It's lots of applications just grind to a halt when you do this. You pull down the font selector in OpenOffice or something, and you wait 2 minutes for it to generate the huge font. Just trying to do previews of each one of them. But sensible people don't have 6,000 PDFs in the fonts directory yet. But it did the purpose. It served the purpose. The the log file almost doubled in size. So it was, the aim of it was to see if that would happen, and it did. So this was really strange. We started seeing all these weird applications doing stuff with fonts. For example, the GNOME session daemon started 2,473 fonts and opened just a few less of them. Really, really weird. Metastasy opened another 238 fonts. Just on the safe side, the WNTK applet opened another 349 fonts. Nautilus did another 301. And the volume control applet opened 860 PDF fonts. Now, it wasn't until... there one more? Oh, that's a tangent. I'll go into that in a minute. It wasn't until last night I actually had this explained to me what was actually causing this. And it was actually a Fedora-specific thing. We screwed up, and we shipped a development branch of font config, which had this really, really horrific bug. But the point here is that font config being a library, the blame was attributed to all these applications, because they were the current process that was running, and all they were doing was calling into this broken library. We had the X font server, which always was kind of special, and every time we boot up, it was rebuilding the font cache, even if you hadn't changed anything since the previous boot. And that took quite an inordinate amount of time. That was quite a few seconds of boot time. And you see similar kinds of things with libraries. Like the volume control applet was loading a color space conversion library, which just seemed really, really bizarre. And how this is happening, you've got libraries with dependencies on other libraries, and you have this cascade of weird things happening. So the attributions that just don't look quite right like that. But the volume control applet isn't entirely innocent. Every 100 milliseconds, it wakes up to find out if someone has changed the volume. Completely pointless, because there's a GStreamer API, and it will actually send you a signal when this has happened. So it could just go to sleep and wait to be woken up by GStreamer. Timers, something slightly interesting, slightly different. There's a talk this afternoon that goes into a lot more detail about this kind of thing. I didn't want to touch on it too much because, it would be kind of bad if I was using all the same examples he does and steal for the fish in the presentation. So we can't read that at all, but never mind. We have this kernel patch, and none of them are really readable, are they? So what we have here is a bunch of function names and the number of times that a timer woke up and the process that caused it to wake up. And some of these were really, really strange. Some of them are user space, and some of them are actually kernel problems. So the kernel was doing some really, really strange things, like the USB OSCI driver, I think, which is the really, really sucky USB implementation, which no one should ever use. It was waking up every 256 milliseconds to part of the USB OSCI specification mandates that you have to wake up this often to do something or other. I'm not a USB expert, so I didn't really understand what it was trying to do, but given I had nothing actually plugged into those ports, it seemed kind of wasteful to be doing that every 256 milliseconds. The keyboard controller was also another victim of this problem. At Hertz divided by 20 frequency, we were waking up to see if someone had plugged in a PS2 keyboard or mouse. Right. Some systems don't even have those anymore, and yeah, it's completely wasteful. Lost my train of thought. Let's move on. This is a great one. So, horrible. So you see the blinky cursor there. That's being fired off by a timer in the cursor. That's being fired by a timer in the kernel. Very, very, at Hertz divided by 5 frequency. And it does that even if we're sat at the VT that we just switched to and we weren't running, no, the other way around. If we were running X, like right now, that cursor is still blinking. It used to be worse until a few months ago. For every time it blinks, it does a kernel allocation, some memory for the image, for the underscore that it blinks, and then it frees it. And it does this every time that it blinks. Yeah, it's kind of silly. GnomeML does something else kind of strange. You have the opposite way around sort of problem. Let's go back to TDY. Can't really make this font any bigger. So right now the GNOME terminal that I have on the desktop is completely idle, not doing anything whatsoever. And yet, knew I was going to do that. So that's what GNOME terminal is doing right now. Even though it doesn't have focus, it's not doing anything, it's really, really happy and busy and doing absolutely nothing useful. Thanks, GNOME terminal. Most of the other terminals are exactly the same, by the way. They all do weird things like that. That was the same problem we had on the console. The cursor blinking was waking up. But even if you turn off cursor blinking, it still does it for some reason. I should have moved these with the other XORG slides, because that's something else that's related. So X uses timers to wake up a lot. Like, seriously, nothing uses timers more than X does, I don't think. And if they could, I'm sure they'd use it even more, wouldn't they? And again, if I switch back to the TDY, I see exactly the same thing happening. It's still firing away all these timers. In fact, let's give another demo of that. So there's X firing off lots and lots of timers. Lots of fun things happening. And it's doing this to find out the mouse position, I believe. No? Why is it using timers? Scheduling. So what is it scheduling right now? There we go. So so it uses the interval timers like an insane amount. So I keep saying this is done because it's scheduling things with its smart scheduler. It has an option called dumb shed, and it makes this whole thing go away because it's a lot more dumb, and it fixes it in a way. I mean, I don't actually notice the difference in using a dumb shed and a smart scheduler, and I would imagine that most people won't notice the difference. The choice of using the interval timers was originally because get time of day was a really, really, really slow operation. Sorry? It remains really slow? You can only do 1,000,000 get time of days a second, yeah. Okay. Sorry?
That's really very slow.
So how many interval timers firings do you get a second? How many, the interval timers you're using, how many of those do you get? Every 20 minutes, okay. Horrors. So, only one busy? I don't think it does. This stuff actually running the VESA driver right now because it's this horrible NVIDIA chipset that does nasty things. Well, need some more poking, I think, to figure that one out. Sorry? Can you repeat the one you said? Can you use the mic?
Yeah, we were checking into this recently, and we don't think that there's anything bad going on now. If the applications are idle, the X server should be idle. Now, applications, of course, they can be as stupid as you like.
Okay, so it could be a cascading effect going through the whole desktop. One stupid application brings down everything else. Moving on to send mail. Even if you don't have any mail queued or no mail arriving or anything, it wakes up every 5 seconds for no reason whatsoever. Absolutely no reason. And that could just go away. Yeah. Nah. Network manager. So this is an amazing one. Network manager wakes up every second to redraw this little icon up here. Even if it isn't changing, or even if the network manager daemon isn't running, it was still waking up just to repaint the icon with exactly the same image every second for no good reason. This is a great one. That was the subject that came into the Red Hat Bugzilla. I thought that was priceless. How it does this is twice per second it's asking X what the video mode is. I'm not entirely sure why the Palm engine needs to know what the screen resolution is, but it seems to want to know very, very often. I thought there was a different thing it was calling for that. Okay, I'll take your word for it. But X will send you an event when the mode changes anyway, so you don't need to sit there and keep poking at it and finding out. The battery applet, which is this fun little thing up here, every second it pulls the battery staging, proc ACPI battery or whatever. This is a really bad thing to do every second because some battery implementations take extraordinarily long to actually read the states from the battery. All kinds of nasty SMM interrupts which go away and do their thing for insane amounts of time and then come back as if nothing happened. So doing it on a really, really high frequency is not a good idea. And it was doing this even if you were running on the mains, it would still pull the battery every second. And it didn't need to do it every second at all, because as you can see there, it only ever reports you in hours and minutes anyway. So it's completely pointless. It doesn't need that higher resolution. And when you get down to 1 minute, I think the system actually auto hibernates for you, so it's completely pointless. GNOME Screensaver was doing something that, just like Keith just mentioned, it was every second it was pulling X to find out the mouse position, to figure out if someone had wiggled the mouse, so did they need to pop up its dialog class for the password or whatever. And again, X has an entire Screensaver API to do all this kind of thing for you. It still beats polling every second. Okay.
Yeah, the X Screensaver API is a disaster. It doesn't really have any way to tell you that the screensaver has happened. Instead, you kind of get to take over the screensaver and you get, oh, bad plan. That would be my fault. But instead of fixing it and sending me a patch to fix the screensaver so that it would actually be useful for them, they didn't bother. So we have this, it's really very frustrating for me for them to say, well, your screensaver API is not usable. And the KDE one is just as bad. And the old X Screensaver application is much worse. So it's bad all around.
I'm sure the intention was good. These GNOME Screensaver also has some weird stuff to do. Something with smart card things that you can just log in with a magic smart card. Even if you don't have a smart card reader, it does this polling thing several times a second. GPM, the little TTY mouse pointer thing, wakes up every 2 seconds to find out if X has gone away. To find out if it's current and if it needs to actually start listening to mouse events. It does this all the time, even in run over 5. It's kind of nasty. It'd be nice if we could have a nicer way to do that, but apparently we lack anything better, really. That is another alternative. Yeah, just don't run it in run level 5. Don't run it, period? Okay. So that smart card thing I just mentioned, it's a really special daemon. It's once a second, it scanned all the USB devices to find out if any of them were smart card readers, including rescanning the same device that it looked at last time to see if it somehow transformed into a smart card reader since last time. It really needs some sort of HAL, UDEV, love or something rather than trying to do this by hand because clearly it's incapable of doing it in the same manner. It also wakes up once a second for absolutely no reason. Has 1 second selected timeout and it times out, loops again, there's another 1 second timeout. Absolutely no reason. This is wonderful. We found this out just last week or maybe the week before. Zen isn't horrific enough that you have this horrible, nasty stuff in the kernel. The user space buffer is just as bad as the kernel stuff. So we have this then store D, which is this magical database thingy. And it does these transactions, and each transaction takes a complete copy of the database backend file every time it starts and ends a transaction. Then D performs 16 transactions every time you ask for info about a domain. So if you're running some monitoring tool, for example, you'll be doing 16 of these. Each time you do that, it's going to make an entire copy of the database backend file. So if you monitor 20 guest domains once a second, it results in Zen Store D doing 80 meg of disk I.O. every second. Wow. But there's something else really, really cool about this. No one noticed. Which means the Linux I.O. subsystem must be absolutely fantastic. No one noticed that, you know, the disk was screaming away and, you know, the system was almost grinding to a halt. Absolutely fantastic. Sorry? It's too busy crashing? Yeah, maybe that's what the reason was. Yeah. So, Nautilus CD burner wakes up to every 2.5 seconds, even if you don't have a CD burner. And it's just really weird timeout to clean stuff up after itself, even if it didn't have anything to clean up, which is usually the case if you don't have a CD burner. So lots of these disasters I've talked about so far, I mean, these applications seem to be doing the right thing, and no one would ever think to actually look under the covers to see what it's actually doing behind the scenes. And you don't really need anything special like magic kernel hacking patches and all sorts of other nasty things. Tools like S-Trace and L-Trace, S3's account, I should demo this, because S3's account is really, really awesome. So let's say, for example, we S3's GNOME terminal again. And we'll also output this. No, it won't. It'll fork another one. Oh, no, don't pivot, you're right. I didn't need the pit off. Thank you, Keith. I don't need the quotes. Okay, so I'll put that to a file. So now we have this huge foo file with all the usual S3 output, which is mostly incomprehensible. And S3 account is this really nice wrapper, which does this really cool thing. It tells you, scroll up a little. It tells you things like, what we've got here, repetitive file name uses, a list of files that access one way or another at least twice. So it tells you all the files that open repetitively. So you can see that when it was starting up, for example, it opened the index.theme 12 times, and it's really useful. It tells you in a nice little summary form of all these files that are opened. It also tells you really cool things like I.O. that was done in a really sort of bad way, like really small I.O. repetitively rather than one big chunk of I.O. It's kind of nice. It tells you what files that weren't closed, and it does a whole bunch of other things depending on what's in the log file it's parsing. It's really, really nice. I was about to tell you. I can't remember the URL off the top of my head, but Google will tell you it's the first hit. S-trace-account, I believe. It should be the first hit. It's a guy called Morten Wellender, I believe. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his surname correctly. Sorry? Yes. Very handy guy. So little things like that are kind of handy. OProfile is another invaluable tool. It's a little more low level than a lot of the stuff I've been talking about, but it's kind of useful to find out why your system is really, really sluggish. You can just point a finger at a problem application or library. And there's a bunch of system tab scripts as well that were written that came out of this work. And I don't really have a good place to host them right now. We need a repository somewhere to collect cool system tab scripts, maybe off the system tab webpage. I'll see if I can get someone on that when I get back to the office. Right, yeah. Actually, yeah, I forgot about that. What's the... Right, Sourceware. Right, Sourceware has got a directory already, so maybe we should end up there. Yeah, I think the measuring context switches is another really easy thing to see. So we have a tool called BMSTAT. It should be in pretty much every distro these days. Oh, that's horribly wrapped. The font's too big. Seriously stiff-necked. So the one column that's interesting here, I'll use this one. The CS column here. So that is 400 contexts, which is a second, which is quite high actually for a mostly idle desktop. But for a completely idle one, it's not too bad. So we did some experiments with this, and a completely idle run level 3, that's around 10 or 20 context switches. GNOME, as we see, was around 400. We managed to get this down to around 35 to 40 with a number of hacks to various various pieces of GNOME and other sort of applications. Most of these are fixed in FC6 now, I believe, except for the ones that are still misbehaving. But Ryan talked this afternoon. He's probably going to go into a lot more detail about that kind of thing. So if that's interesting to you, you should probably go see him rather than Rusty's boring virtualization talk. No offense, Rusty. So how am I doing for time? Wrap it up? Okay. I'll just go straight to questions. There was some more horror shows, but if anyone's got any questions, I'll take those. Have a dead mic.
Okay. Well, tapping doesn't work, but just talking does. Okay. I'd like to just like say sorry about denotify. I blame Jeremy Allison for getting somebody drunk at a party, and he agreed to merge it. I think that the battery applet does need to monitor even while it's on AC because it wants to tell you how charged it has become.
Right, but it still does it after it's fully charged. It doesn't need to constantly do it all the time.
Yeah.
If it's charging, yes, I'd forgive it for doing so. But, and it still doesn't need to do it every second, really. It could do it every 10 seconds, 30 seconds, or whatever. Even once a minute.
Some batteries are so kind as to only update their value once every 15 minutes.
That leads to a different place as well. It's a separate flashbot file. There's a state and a one with a lot more info, yeah. And state is the one, I believe, for the plugging, unplugging, and info is for all the how long I have left, who made me, this kind of thing. Any more questions?
Does the library part, some people have very long LD library paths, and so we try and open a whole bunch of libraries, you know, the TLS versions of libraries.
Oh, we're looking in the alternative places to find out where the library is?
Is that actually a problem, or does our negative de-entry caching solve that?
I think the negative de-entry caching is the, it mostly makes that problem go away. It's not really, how fast that returns is almost instantaneous, so it's, I don't think it's that big a deal. As long as your de-cache is actually populated with the things, and if every application is doing this, chances are it's going to be in the negative de-cache.
Just a quick question about iNotify. Do you know when we're going to be able to do an iNotify watch on more than just a single directory at a time, like a whole file system? Just kind of walking the entire directory tree really sucks on boot.
I don't know, but I agree with you. Yes, it does suck. And I've had people complain to me about that before. So tell the iNotify developers, whack them or something.
I might have to stop it there because we've got to get to the next talk. But join me in thanking Dave for that talk.
Thank you.
Steve, last
Jordan, cool. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.